Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, welcome back. How are you today?
I am fantastic. I have returned from the great Pacific Northwest. Carlos, many thanks to Kieran for filling in last week. You know, the temperatures have dipped near the freezing mark the last few nights here in Northwest Ohio, but the golf action is still running hot around the world. Lexi held off Lydia Ko to win in Korea. Bernhard Langer got back to the Charles Schwab Cup race with a win in San Antonio. And PGA Tour rookie Emiliano Grillo from Argentina won the first event of 2016. We got a lot of golf to talk about tonight, Carlos, so let's go.
Let's go. We are excited about it. And our very important guest, the IG of the week, will be Neil Fraser. So you don't want to miss that. And, hey, let's start like always with the weekend backspin. And we're going to start with the LPGA that was played, the LPGA KEB Hana Bank Championship from the Sky 72 Golf Club Ocean Course at Incheon, South Korea. There's been a lot of action in Incheon lately with the President's Cup and now this tournament, where 20-year-old American Lexi Thompson, she won her sixth LPGA Tour title with a narrow one-shot victory over a resurgent Jannie Tseng and newcomer to the LPGA Tour, Song Hyun Park. She finished at 15-under. She also won the major LPGA Classic presented by Kraft earlier this year. She came from one off the 54-hole pace of Song Hyun Park and Lydia Ko, and although she was forced to wait while the final trio finished their round, she had done enough to hold on. Joint runner-up Park was the talk of much of the week. The 22-year-old LPGA Tour event debutante, opening with a course record round of 62 and then sharing the lead into the final round. Jannie Tseng, meanwhile, continues her resurgence. This is a welcome scene, most definitely. I would love to see her at the top of her game once again and competing against the big four of the LPGA, Lydia, Envy, Stacy, and Lexi. She had Lydia Ko had an opportunity to regain the number one position in the women's game with a win or a runner-up finish, but she fell short after a disappointing 72 on Sunday. Amy Yan, she produced a miraculous round of 62, including a final nine-hole LPGA Tour record of 27 to share fourth place with Jarena Pillar and Lydia Ko. Yang birdie every hole of the back nine at the Sky 72 layout. Fred, the LPGA Tour now heads to Taiwan for the Fubon LPGA Taiwan Championship. But what about Lexi's win, and how about the resurgence of Jannie Tseng?
Yeah, you pretty much touched the high points of the tournament there in Korea, the KEB Hana Bank Championship. Lexi got her second win of 2015. She had to pass Lydia Ko, who held the 54-hole lead. But Lydia, as you mentioned, could only fire an even par 72 on Sunday, and so Lexi was able to pass her along with a couple other of the women. You know, she just had an excellent year. I'm talking about Lexi Thompson here. You know, she, in addition to her two wins, she's had a runner-up, a third, and 11 top 10 finishes in all. She's now fourth in the money race, fourth in the race to the CME Globe. She's fourth in driving distance and second in greens and regulation. You know, Carlos, if you hit it long and you find a lot of greens, that's a pretty good combination, even if you're not the world's best putter. Amy Yang, talking about putting, holy moly, she turned in her best round ever. She birdied all nine holes on the back nine on Sunday to fire a 10-under par 62. She was making putts from everywhere. Nine birds for a 27 on the back nine. That's getting your golf ball around the course, Carlos. You mentioned Jannie Tseng. She finished tied for runner-up just a shot back, really, really doing well on her comeback. You know, and it's just in time for the Fubon LPGA Taiwan Championship next week in her native homeland. And as you mentioned, if Ko would have finished just a little higher, she would have overtaken Envy to regain the number one in the Rolex ranking, but didn't quite have it on Sunday there in Korea, Carlos.
She didn't, but hey, even though you think about it, we're like expecting her to win every day, every week.
Yeah, yeah.
She just finished tied for fourth. It's incredible the run
that
she's having.
Yeah. But it's unusual when she has a 54-hole lead that she doesn't close it out because she's so steady and so solid throughout her whole game. It's unusual to see her falter like that on the back nine.
That's right. But anyway, a great performance for her, and I can't wait to see Yannick Tsang this week at Taiwan, her homeland. Let's see if she continues that resurgence. Hey, let's talk about one that I've been waiting to talk about. It's the PGA Tour, the Fries.com Open.
Who is this guy? Have we heard about this guy before? Have you talked about this guy before?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about him so you get to know him a little bit more. I was playing at the Silverado Country Club, North Torres in Napa, California. 23-year-old, listen to his name and listen and record it for yourself. It's Emiliano Grillo. That's how it is. Grillo, that's how we call it in English, right? But it's Grillo, golfing. His golfing career has always shown potential, but in the space of 3 weeks, this Argentine golfer from Resistencia there in Argentina has not only secured his PGA Tour card, but he has won on his debut as a PGA Tour card holder and confirmed much of that potential. 3 weeks ago, he won the Web.com Tour Championship after finishing runner-up in one of the earlier Web.com Tour final events. And on Sunday, he won the opening event of the 2015-16 wraparound PGA Tour season. He defeated Kevin Na at the second hole of a playoff to win. And in doing so, he has his PGA Tour title entitlements until at least the end of the 2018 PGA Tour season. And he starred at the 2016 Masters, his second major championship, given that he already played at the PGA Championship in August. His victory will also move him inside the top 40 on the world ranking. So to say the least, this has been a career-altering week for him. He also missed a golden opportunity to win that playoff at the first extra hole when he missed a downhill four-foot putt, but as Na made a mess on their return to the 18th, Grillo will birdie and the victory was his. Grillo, like so many of his Argentinian colleagues who have played in Europe to hone his own golfing skills, and although he has occasionally ventured to the U.S., including when he was the runner-up at my native Puerto Rico Open earlier this year, he has a built reputation as a player who could well emulate the deeds of Roberto De Vicenzo, Eduardo Romero, Angel Cabrera, and Andres Romero. He has played well in the U.S. and when he has played there, and indeed in Europe, he has played well enough to finish runner-up at the Dubai Desert Classic. So while it was perhaps a surprise to see him win so early in his PGA Tour career, it was not a shock. I mean, this guy can putt and can putt well from everywhere, and you just saw it how he did it to go to 15 under in the last hole. In a sense, Grillo is one of the old-fashioned players in so much he has played extensively internationally and learned his craft and the variety provided by such before committing himself to the U.S. He's clearly a name we're going to be hearing a lot on a regular basis. And mark it down, I'm saying it right now, today, October the 20th, 2015, this is the PGA Tour's Rookie of the Year. Give him the trophy. That's him. That's it. Nobody, everybody else is going to be running for second. So that's it. There were as many as 8 players who conceivably have won this event over the closing 9 holes, but it ended at the end it was South Africa's Tyrone Van Aswegen, Justin Thomas, and Jason Bond, which are 3rd place, a shot behind him on the playoff, with Charles Schwartzel, Patrick Rogers, Justin Rose, and Kyle Reifers, another shot back in 16th position. Fred.
Yeah, I'm going to leave the pronunciation of all these South American and Spanish guys to you, Carlos. You do it much better than I ever will. So I'll give it a little stab here. But there was a lot of wine swilling going on last week in Northern California as PGA Tour rookie Emiliano Grillo won the inaugural event of 2016 at the Fries.com. even though he nearly took out Rory McIlroy at the short par 4 17th on Sunday. Did you see that, Cost? You know, Griot said to the media afterwards, yeah, that would have been bad. Everybody was waving the guys up behind. I thought they were gone or waiting for us. That's why we hit. There is nobody from the tour there calling us. We just thought they were done or just mark it so we could go ahead. Rory, who showed severe signs of rust in every part of his game, set up the near miss, would have put me out of my misery. Griot tried to apologize to McIlroy, but he wasn't able to find him after he finished. He said he almost ran ahead a few fairways to apologize. Anyway, disaster was avoided, and Griot, who just won the Web.com Tour Championship a couple weeks ago, backed it up with his first win on the PGA Tour as a full member. Carlos, I know you remember him because he narrowly missed winning in Puerto Rico back in March. You've been talking about him all year. He's your guy. Like you said, you're already picking him for Rookie of the Year, and he does take a big lead in that, boy, right off the bat. He moves from number 72 in the world to number 36. So now he qualifies for the majors, the WGCs. You know, a really big win for the rookie. Gives him a huge lead in the Rookie of the Year race. And to get in those big money and no-cut events is really, really a big advantage for him. For Kevin Na, little good news, bad news. You don't usually see tour pros trying to hit a driver from the deck, but that's what Na tried on the second playoff. And the playoff, I just couldn't believe he did that. Bad news, he hooked the driver off the deck and he'll end up losing to Griot. Good news, he still finished second and won $648,000 plus a bunch of FedEx Cup points. Hey, you mentioned Trevor Von Aswagen. You know, he finished one shot back for third. He started Sunday in the emergency room with dizziness. We've all seen what dizziness can do to Jason Day back at the U.S. Open back in June. But because of the fog delay, he was able to make his tee time and still collect the big paycheck. You know, tournaments like these, a few wraparounds here in the fall, really big for these young guys and some veterans that didn't maybe have the best year last year. Two vets that had a really good week, Charles Schwartzel and Jason Bone, both end up tying for sixth. Also, young guys like Justin Thomas and Patrick Rogers had a good week. If Rogers is now healthy, he could have a very big year, Carlos. He may give your – well, of course, he's not a rookie anymore, but he could have a very good year. He's a very good player. He was hampered by back issues last year. So, hey, name from the past, Johnny Vegas. He got back to the PGA Tour through the web.com, played three strong rounds before a final round 73 dropped him to T10, but still a very positive week. Justin Rose is in the driver's seat for most of the tournament, but only managed 7-2 on Sunday, and I really thought this was his tourney to lose. Just couldn't get her done on the back nine on Sunday. Brandon Steele led most of the week, but pressure got to him, and his final round 76 dropped him all the way to T17. Carlos, here's some numbers for you. That falling that far down cost him $927,000. That's a pretty expensive green fee for 18 holes. You know, although neither played this week, Jason Day moves back to number one by 0.02 of a point over Spieth. Rory's still number three, Carlos.
And one thing that I want to point out, what you talked about, Kevin Na, I don't know if you saw that shot. He had made it before on the 18th, and it worked out fine. He was saying in the interview afterwards that he just knew he has made it all the time. I don't know if you saw it when it happened. When he hit it a little bit behind, and it got like little charge, electrical charge from the. I was like, wow! Yeah. No, I'd never seen that before on it, but it was funny.
That happens a lot. The sand and little stones that are underneath the grass there. You know, that friction from that. You know, you got that club head coming around there at 115, 120 miles an hour. Those little sparks fly up quite a bit, but they caught it on camera. That was kind of cool. They caught it with that slow motion. Yeah.
Right. Well,
hey, Carlos, too. I forgot to mention on a side note, Matt Kuchar didn't play in the Fries, but he really didn't have a very good year on the tour, but he did win in Fiji last week, evidently supplementing his Christmas fund with some appearance fee money. Plus, it's just an easy little hop from the President's Cup there in Korea. Here's your geometry lesson for the week. Fiji consists of 332 islands which are located in the middle of the Pacific, 1,728 miles northeast of Australia, and 5,435 miles southwest of San Francisco. It's a long ways from nowhere. But they tell me it's beautiful there, and I think Vijay Singh is their most important product, Carlos.
Oh, he is, and definitely Matt Kuchar may have earned a very significant fee in being afforded a holiday for his extended family for competing there at the Fiji International this week. But it is one thing to be the recipient of those rewards, right? But another to fully justify it with such reasons for a magnificent performance. And I saw a glimpse of the reviews of it, and it wasn't fair. Even the wind was playing for Matt. I don't know if you saw one of the replays there. He was waiting to putt on the green, and the wind was so hard, the wind blew the ball inside the hole. Okay? He had everything going his way. It was like, what do I have to make? I mean, he's making everything. So that was real funny. But anyway, going down to the European Tour on the Portugal Masters that was played on the Oceanico Victoria Golf Course in Vila Moura in Portugal, Andy Sullivan became the first man to win three European Tour events this season as he claimed a stunning wire-to-wire victory at the Portugal Masters. He came into the final round with a five-shot lead. A round of 66 extended that to nine shots as he finished well clear of playing partner and compatriot Chris Wood on 23-under. He's a 28-year-old and smashed the record winning margin for the event, which had been established by Alexander Levy, the winner by three shots last year, so he really smashed it. This win moves him into the top 50 of the official World Golf Rankings and means he has three wins in 23 events after not claiming a victory in his first 84 appearances on the European Tour. Chris Wood finished in second place at 14-under after a round of 68, whilst third place was shared between Eduardo Larriva, Trevor Fisher Jr., and Anthony Walfred.
Hey, you know what? I looked this up today, and I know this was his third win of the year. And so I got to look at his stats and looking at some stuff, and I thought, boy, this will put him in position in the race to Dubai. And so I'm scrolling through. He's number 15 in the race. He's got three wins, Carlos, on the European Tour, and he's only number 15 in the race to Dubai. How in the world does that happen? You know, he won twice early in the year back down in South Africa in February in Johannesburg. Both tournaments were there. His third win came here in Portugal this week. How can you have three wins on your own tour and not be in the top five or at least the top 10? You know, in addition, he's had six top 10 finishes and 24 starts, earned over 1.2 euro. But on a positive note, he's moved to number 47 in the world. So he like Grillo, who won on thefries.com, will get into the majors and the lucrative WGC events, which should help him out quite a bit because those are no cut and big money. So that'll move him up quite a bit going forward, but that's a problem in Europe. You know, how do you win three times and not be in the top 10 in the race to Dubai for the year? That they got a problem, and they got to fix that.
I think that one of the things that Keith Pelly would have to do is really, when you mentioned this to me, I saw it and I was trying to see where he was after he won this third event, and I was like, why is he not in the top 10? I mean, why would you care about winning so much if you're not going to compete for it? So it basically rewards big tournaments instead of every tournament, like it's more here in the PGA Tour, or at least we're getting used to that. And I don't know, it's just confusing to me that why he's not there.
Well, I know Kieran doesn't want to hear this, but you know, the European Tour is really like a web.com tour for the PGA Tour. I mean, that's just what it is. And so, and we've seen it, guys, go from here. You know, we saw Koepka go over there. We saw Peter Uihlein go over there. You know, build up enough points in the official world golf ranking to get starts back in the U.S. to earn their cards and those kind of things. And so, you know, it's working now for Sullivan. He's in the top 50, so he's going to get in this other stuff, and that'll work his way over to the U.S. But still, I don't care. I don't care what. If you win three times, you should be at the top of your league. I mean, that's you know, there's no way.
Yep, that's right. I mean, no other player has won three times on that tour, and they are above him, a lot of them. So unbelievable. But anyway, let's talk about the other tournament in the Champions Tour, the San Antonio Championship from the TPC San Antonio ATT Canyons in San Antonio, Texas. Bernhard Langer, he'd been here before, 2012, 2013, when he lost in frustrating fashion on the first hole of a playoff. But he made sure on Sunday, birding three of the final four holes to win it by three strokes when he rolled in a 16-footer for birdie on the 18th for the clincher. Langer punctuated his victory with a fist pump and a wave to the gallery. Hey, yes, I made it finally. So Fred, with this win, he's just now 66 points behind Colin Montgomery for the lead in the Charles Schwab Cup points race.
Yeah, he got himself back in the Charles Schwab Cup race. It really, Colin Montgomery and Jeff Maggard kind of separated themselves from the rest of the field. But Langer says, not so fast, guys. I'm still around. You know, they got one more tournament left, the Toshiba this week, and then they go to the, you know, to the top Charles Schwab Cup Championship down there in Arizona. So he's, you know, going to be right in the thick of it. If he has a good week this week, he could actually go in there, you know, right at the top of the leaderboard heading in for the $1 million bonus. So he is determined, man. He is very dogged. He just, you know, knows the grindstone. He grinds it out every week, every shot, every day. You know, he's what now, 57, 58, you know. He's not a 50-year-old, you know. I mean, he's got some age. He's been there, you know, every year. It seems like he's right there at the end of the year.
And it's going to be a fun finish between those three, so we don't want to miss it. That wraps up our weekend back stream. When we come back, we're going to have the Part 5 news presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away. We'll have a short break.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network, and we're going to take the news of this past week. And Fred, you have the tee shot this week again, and you're going to talk to us about some very good news from Dottie Pepper.
Yeah, CBS announced this week that Dottie Pepper will replace David Faraday on their golf broadcast team. In the press release from CBS, Pepper said, I am excited to join CBS Sports and return to covering live golf full-time. As an analyst, you want to cover your sport at the highest level, and being a part of the CBS Sports golf team with the strongest and best schedule in golf, including two majors, affords me the opportunity to do just that. She's going to debut Saturday, January 30th for the network's coverage of the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. In addition, she will remain with ESPN as an analyst for their golf coverage. Pepper played on the LPGA Tour for 17 years and won 17 titles, including two major championships, both at the Nabisco Danish Shore in 1992 and 1999. She was named the 1992 LPGA Player of the Year and was the Vair Trophy Award winner for low scoring average that same year. She was also known as a fiery match play competitor and was a six-time member of the U.S. Solheim Cup team, as well as assistant captain in 2013. Dottie has been a very recognizable golf announcer for several years and is a solid addition to the CBS crew. She's also going to make history, Carlos, when she will become the first woman golf announcer at the Masters in April. Groundbreaking stuff from CBS, Carlos.
We want to congratulate Dottie for that. It's a great accomplishment, and she's very well-deserved for her, so can't wait to see her as part of that coverage. Hey, I'm going to talk a little bit about something that I know is a little touchy for us, about SMU and the NCAA sanctions. And, you know, SMU senior and reigning U.S. amateur and NCAA's men's golf champion, Bryson DeChambeau, he told the Golf Channel that he has decided to leave the SMU team. In his statement to the Golf Channel, DeChambeau didn't mention the NCAA sanctions, with which the SMU golf team was hit, but his announcement comes just 2 weeks after that news broke on September 29th, along with the announcement that the SMU's basketball team will be heavily penalized. DeChambeau told the Golf Channel, and I quote, "To best prepare myself for the next 6 months of competition and future events, I felt it was appropriate to make this decision now to be fair to my coaches and the team." Well, after he won the U.S. Amateur this summer, Clovis, California native DeChambeau, he spoke excitedly of playing, preparing for April's Masters during his senior year at SMU and defending his NCAA individual title. Now, however, SMU's golf team faces sanctions from, stemming from violations that occurred under former head coach Josh Gregory. The NCAA docked SMU's golf team 25% of its scholarships for 3 years and banned it from postseason competition in 2016, which would mean that DeChambeau couldn't defend his title. SMU announced early this week that it is appealing some of the basketball and golf sanctions, but the appeal process will take weeks or months. DeChambeau decided not to wait. Winning the U.S. Amateur earned him spots in the 2016 Masters, the U.S. Open, and British Open. Provided that he remains an amateur, the Golf Channel reported that he will probably turn pro after the Masters, in which case he would have to qualify for the U.S. Open and British. He had joined Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Ryan Moore as having won the NCAA and U.S. Amateur in the same year. He also joined a list of SMU products to win the U.S. Amateur, Hank Keeney in 1997, Colt Nost in 2007, and Kelly Kraft in 2011 were the others. So, Fred, very, very unfortunate that we couldn't see Bryson DeChambeau had the chance to defend that title and maybe, you know, grow up more in that in his career.
Yeah, Carlos, don't get me started on the NCAA. You know, I had that rant 2 weeks ago.
I didn't want to mention it.
Don't get me turned on here. I will just go off, and you'll have to hit the mute button because those people are so idiotic, and this is so stupid that he can't get the chance to defend his NCAA individual title. That is just – it's outrageous to me. But that's the NCAA. They have no clue, and they're not long for the world, so that's okay. Hey, Carlos, moving right along, remember 2 weeks ago we talked about Tom Watson turning down the PGA of America's offer to be inducted into their PGA Hall of Fame in respect for their treatment of his buddy Ted Bishop. Well, the PGA of America has announced the 2015 inductees who did accept the honor, and Lee Trevino leads the list. First, he got the professional emeritus gig at the Greenbrier. Now, this honor, Lee is hot right now. List also includes the posthumous inductions of Payne Stewart, Charlie Sifford, and Tommy Bolt. Trevino, 75, won the PGA Championship of both 74 and 84, in addition to a pair of U.S. Opens and Open Championship titles. He won 29 times on both the PGA Tour and the Champions Tour. You know, Payne Stewart, of course, immortalized, won the 89 PGA Championship as well as two U.S. Open titles before his untimely death in a plane crash. Tommy Bolt was known for his fiery temper, won 15 times on the PGA Tour, including the 1958 U.S. Open. Charlie Sifford was a pioneer in the integration of the professional game. He became the first African-American to earn membership to the PGA in 1961. And the class of 2015 also includes Michael Docter and Ray Cutright, who were named PGA Professional of the Year in 2013 and 2014, respectively, as well as a former University of Texas coach, George Hannon. PGA of America President Derek Sprague said, "It is with great pride that the PGA of America welcomes this exceptional class into the PGA of America Hall of Fame, who by their achievements have made significant and lasting contributions to our association and the game of golf. These seven gentlemen will be honored November 12th at the PGA of America's annual meeting in Palm Beach Gardens, Carlos."
So we have to wait until then to see it? No way. We have to do some more often. I don't know. Anyway, I have some news about Scott Stallings. Let me tell you that stepping onto the tee for the first time in more than 3 months was a bit like starting his career as a rookie. The excitement of hearing his name called, the rush of competition, the feeling that this was a new part of his life, the most recent part certainly wasn't any fun. He's 30 years old. He's a three-time winner on the PGA Tour, and was playing on the Fries.com Open after a three-month suspension for taking performance-enhancing drugs. As harsh as that sounds, Stallings said he never tested positive, despite twice taking random tests under the PGA Tour drug testing program after a doctor prescribed a supplement to fight lingering fatigue. As it turned out, he had a form of sleep apnea and underwent surgery in July. Now he's trying to get his game back while also hoping that this situation might help others who have health issues and mistakenly take something that is on the banned substance list. Stallings was just the third player suspended since the PGA Tour enacted the policy in 2008. He said he took an over-the-counter supplement called the HEA, which is an anabolic agent that is considered a precursor to testosterone production. It is banned by the PGA Tour, and Stallings admitted his mistake was not going through the process of finding out if it was allowed. He said he alerted the tour officials in February that he had taken 25 milligram aura pills and wasn't told until late March that by admitting he had taken a banned substance, he would be subject to the tour's anti-doping penalties. But it wasn't until July that he was handed a 90-day suspension, which he began serving immediately with the idea to use that time to get his health in order. He was really not happy with how the matter was handled by the tour. He definitely understands that it was his fault for not checking, but under the tour's policy, neither the drug nor details are disclosed, just that he had violated the PED rules. So he feels like, you know, it could possibly hurt his integrity, and it could have been a little bit of like a two-way street here on the responsibility. But the main thing is that he's back healthy after all that he endured with surgery and treatment to get his health back. So hitting a few bad shots now that he's back on tour is unlikely to bother him too much. He missed the cut this weekend by only a shot, but he plans to play as much as possible during the six-week stretch to start the new season, including this week's Shriners Hospital for Children Open in Las Vegas. So as for any stigma that might be attached to his name, Stallings is hoping that his history will help others and possibly lead to changes. So, Fred, I surely hope so.
Carlos, I put this under the category of stupid, stupid, stupid. Over-the-counter drug. He turned himself in. Never had a positive test. This sounds like something the NCAA would do. You know, what the hell is the PGA Tour thinking? Yeah, oh my goodness. Come on, somebody needs to use some common sense in this world. Where is common sense gone? Everybody's so politically correct, common sense goes right out the window. Oh, Carlos, don't get me started. I'm fired up. Hey, Gary Player is at it again. I'm going to be turning into the Gary Player of the world. Every time you put a camera on me, I'm going to be ready to go. I'm going to fire off about something. Hey, he was in front of a camera spouting off on Morning Drive last week. He was at the Greenbrier to promote the newer collaboration course that he, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, and Trevino are building there. Jim Justice, the owner of the Greenbrier, wants to try and get a U.S. Open on that golf course. That's the kind of caliber golf course that's going to be. He sat down and talked to Gary Williams about a series of subjects. One thing he said, a golf superstar has to have six major wins, which Jordan Spieth with two, Jason Day one, and Rory McIlroy with three have yet to do. He said golf's in a very good place right now, and these three have set the bar very high for the rest of the youth, but he does not consider them great players just yet. Player got off on the subject of golf course design, length, and what will happen when a good big golfer the size of, say, a LeBron James, 6'5", or tall or strong, fit, and can hit a golf ball 400 yards comes into the game. Better athletes are going to be drawn to golf as young athletes, simply for the longevity and income-earning potential. Player said he earns more money today at the age of 80 than he ever earned as a player. The tour and the leaders of golf industry are like ostriches. They have their head in the sand. They are reluctant to change, and change is the requisite of survival. He went on to say that in 30 years, 30 to 40% of tour players, just a little bit less than half, will be able to hit the ball 400 yards with their driver. we won't see any more drivers off the deck like Kevin Nautch, right? And you know what? I really think Mr. Player is onto something here. I kind of agree with him. We have seen golf courses being stretched and stretched to accommodate the length of today's professionals with the technology, balls, club, shafts, et cetera, plus the conditioning, fitness, and training these young players receive. These great players will continue to hit the ball farther and farther. You know, instead of worrying about the length of the putter, the USGA and the R&A better start worrying about the length the ball is going and rendering these great historic golf courses of the world meaningless, Carlos.
I think that he's talking because he might have, he still goes and conditions himself, goes to pitch shots, all that stuff. So, but yeah, there's some truth to it.
You better be careful. Anyway. He can still kick both your and my butt.
Oh, definitely. That's why I'm here saying it, not in front of him, Mr. Player. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm behind the microphone, so don't take it personal. No, but there's truth to what he's saying. Definitely, technology is everywhere, and it's really enhancing, you know, games in every sport. Hey, one last piece of news. The British Open will be held outside England and Scotland for the first time in more than 60 years when it returns to Northern Ireland's Royal Portrush in 2019. Tournament organizers, the Royal and Ancient, said last Tuesday. The British Open Championship was last held at the Northern Irish Lynx course in 1951, the only other time the major championship was held anywhere but England and Scotland, and will be held there twice again over the following two decades. The British Open will be the latest in a series of high-profile events to visit Northern Ireland, which was beset by three decades of violence that claimed 3,600 lives before a peace deal largely ended the bloodshed 17 years ago. It was once blacklisted next to Baghdad and Beirut as a tourism no-go zone. This British province successfully hosted the opening stages of the Giro d'Italia last year as thousands long starved for major sporting events packed the streets there. It's a sporadic sectarian violence still persists there in parts, though, and often breaks out when marches held by rival communities reach their peak in mid-July each year, potentially on the eve of the Open's return on July 18th to the 21st in 2019. You know, this push to bring the Open back to Northern Ireland gained momentum after three players from that country, Graham McDowell, Darren Clark, and Rory McIlroy, won majors since 2010. McIlroy is now a four-time major champion and one of the world's best players. You know, their return to Royal Portrush, the hometown of GMAC and Clark as members, was announced last year, but the date was subject to course improvements being made. So work to create two new holes, number 7 and number 8, on the Dunloe's Links is underway, using land from the adjacent valley course to develop a new par 5 hole. These new holes will replace the current 17th and 18th holes, freeing up land to be used to accommodate the spectator village and other infrastructure. The length of the course will increase by just less than 200 yards to 7,337 yards, and the number of bunkers will be increased by 3 to a total of 62. That still leaves Royal Portrush with the fewest bunkers of any of the courses on the British Open rotation. Maybe a reason why Rory already said in a statement that this is one of his favorite golf courses in the world and can't wait to play it there. But reality is that Royal Portrush held an extremely successful Irish Open in 2012, attracting some 130,000 fans for the week. It has also held the Senior British Open 6 times. So the R&A said it expected to be the biggest sporting event ever held in Northern Ireland, and Northern Irish lawmakers predicted an economic boost of £70 million. That's about $108 million for it.
And that wraps up the Par 5 news for October 20th. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, they also offer every golfer the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. You can set up your own golf shop, Carlos. Sell to your buddies. United Golf Network provides instant free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. And another free perk is a membership to MyGolf in the U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have our very important guest of the week. The VIG will be Neil Fraser, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Neil Fraser. He's the director of golf at Lakewood Golf Club at the Marriott Grand Hotel Resort and Spa on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail in southern Alabama. He's a graduate of Michigan State University in Turf Management. He spent 20 years traveling the world and building golf courses for Robert Trent Jones. He was involved with the trail from its conception. The first shovel of dirt turned, and is still involved in renovations and new projects today for the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview you have for us.
Yeah, it was really funny. You can hear in the interview, but I happened to meet Neil a few years ago when I was on the way down to Florida. We stopped at one of the trail courses at Prattville, just north of Montgomery. And my brother-in-law and I drove all night. We stopped. We played early in the morning. We had some lunch. We went out for an afternoon round before we drove on down. And we happened to get paired up with a man and his son on the Senator course, which is the same course they play the LPGA Tour event there. And, you know, had a great round playing with he and his son and talking. And it just so happened that it was Neil Fraser. And he was involved with the trail from the very beginning. He helped build all the courses. He dug a lot of dirt and was really a great guy, a lot of fun to talk to. Had a great time talking to him. And then this spring when I was in down in South Alabama, I happened to run into him again because he's now the director of golf at the Lakewood Golf Club down there by Mobile Bay. And so we struck up a conversation. We ended up having dinner together and talking some more. And I wanted to have him on the show. And so it seemed like a good time with winter coming on. People here in the north are starting to think about going south. Just want to kind of get the point across that, you know, Florida is not the only place. You know, I know there's Hilton Head. You know, there's all those places, St. Simon Island. There's Florida. You got South Alabama is a great place, and it's not nearly as expensive as going someplace else. And the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail is fantastic. So run the interview, and then I'll talk some more about that afterwards.
Let's play it.
We are happy to be talking to Neil Fraser, the director of golf at Lakewood Golf Club. It's near Point Clear in Alabama. It's right across the Mobile Bay from Mobile, Alabama, and it's part of the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. Neil's kind of a transplanted northerner. He earned a turf degree from Michigan State University and was in the golf construction business for many years. And Neil, we really want to welcome you here to Back Nine Report. How are you doing this evening?
Good, great. Thanks for having me on. Like I said, I love to talk about the trail and about golf, so glad to be here.
Hey, you worked in the construction industry for quite a while building golf courses, and that's how you kind of got started with the trail. You were working with Robert Trent Jones at the time.
Yeah, I was in construction for about 20 years, about 13 years of that with Mr. Jones. We were a design-build firm. Then went on with Roger Rulwich after that. Roger was Mr. Jones' chief architect of 34 years. But, yeah, I was the one that met Bobby Vaughn, who was the guy that came up with the idea for the trail. Went and got with Dr. Bronner with the Retirement Systems of Alabama, put it together. I met Bobby out in 1988 at Tanglewood, North Carolina. And he said as we left that project, which was a big renovation we did with the TPC Tour, he goes, you know, I got this guy with all this money. We're going to build all these courses in Alabama. And, you know, I'd heard that thing a million times where a guy says, I got money to build golf courses. So sure enough, I was working in Ireland building a golf course called the Dare Manor over in Ireland in 1990. And I get a call from Mr. Jones and Roger in August, and he says, remember that guy that said he was going to build these courses in Alabama? I said, yeah. He goes, well, guess what? He wants you in Alabama in September, and he wants to dig test holes at two of the sites. And those sites were Oxmoor Valley and Magnolia Grove. I came in September, flew into town, and dug test holes all over them just to make sure, you know, checking on rock and that kind of thing. And December 11th, we broke ground in Oxmoor Valley. And January 11th of 1991, we broke ground on Magnolia Grove. And if you can think of a 254-hole project that fast after in September, the guy's saying, you know, we're going over and just digging some test holes. So that's kind of how it all just happened, just like that.
Yeah, a few years ago, I was on the way down to Florida and pulled into Prattville to play a few holes and happened to catch you and your son playing a few holes that day. And that's how we first met. And you told me kind of gave me the background and the story of the Robert Trent Jones and a little bit about the construction there at Prattville. And you've been involved in pretty much all of the courses through the years, right?
Yeah, again, I was the director of construction. I was in charge of it all. Bobby and I would go up and down the state. I've touched everyone. One of the things Bobby had always asked me to do, because my background, I shaped for Mr. Jones. I traveled all over the world building golf courses with Mr. Jones, Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in Manassas, you know, all up through New England, over in Spain at Valderrama, Bell Reve for the PGA. And one of the things Bobby asked me is that I would be the last one on every green up and down the trail. So if we take all 400 and whatever it is, 68 golf holes, I pretty much touched every green and was part of, you know, every decision on you know, big decisions. They're day-to-day things, and I can't build it all. There were a lot of great people, great guys that we had in our company that were all part of the biggest project ever attempted in the world. So you got to remember, at one time, we had 454-hole sites going on and 336-hole sites going on. I mean, when we were with Mr. Jones, we were more of a boutique company. We had a bunch of shapers, and we grew to this big monster for a while. And when we finished the trail, the first phase of the trail, that life raft really wasn't big enough to keep everybody in. We had to kind of beat them off with a paddle. But a lot of those guys ended up. Larry Woody's head of quality grassing. Al McCurick helped up. He's one of the most successful golf course builders in the country. Jeremy Slessor's head of European golf design now over in London, England. Dan Garson headed up Greenscape, which was Robert Trent Jones Jr.'s company. So we put a lot of people back into the industry, and a lot of people have their roots tied to that Robert Trent Jones golf trail.
Yeah, I think it's 468 holes, like you said, total. I think there's 11 facilities. Lakewood, the place that you're at now where you're the director of golf, I believe was the last facility added, which it was all – the golf course was already built, but you did some extensive renovations there.
Yeah, we did. Between – in 2002, we did a $7.5 million renovation of the Dogwood course. That course had 9 holes that went out towards the bay. All the water on the front 9 was tidal, and if it was high tide, before we did the renovation, you could not play that golf course. It was closed during high tide. So we spent a lot of money bulkheading it, building it up, putting great drainage, great irrigation in. That course is host every year hosts a state amateur tournament. The Dogwood course, it hosted the Lady State Four Ball this year, the Men's State Amateur last year, the Lady State Amateur the year before, and has the State Boys State Junior next year. The Azalea course, we did a $5.5 million renovation in 2005. It's on a little higher ground, so it didn't need as much bulkheading and, you know, kind of the high dollar stuff. It stretches to 7,600 yards at sea level. It's a continuous 18. And I'm going to tell you what, you play 7,600 at sea level, that's a bunch of golf, especially on a golf course that does not have a lot of roll. And, you know, that ties back to Dr. Bronner's theory about building the trail is nobody remembers easy. He said, you know, if you want people to come, nobody remembers easy. He used PGA West. He says, I remember I was out at PGA West, and that golf course is the toughest golf course in the world. And he says, all these people are paying $100 to play it. So he figures, I figured that's going to be my theme. Nobody remembers easy. And that's, you know, a lot of the trail is that if you play from the back tees and things like that.
Well, they're really good courses. I've had the opportunity to play several of them. And, of course, this spring we were down there at your place at Magnolia Grove. And really, for golf fans that want to go someplace in the winter from up here in the north, if they want to go to southern Alabama and around that Mobile Bay, you can stay in Mobile. You can stay there at the Marriott Grand Resorts at Point Clear on the eastern shore of Mobile Bay. You can stay at either place. They're both Robert Trent Jones' own facilities. And play Magnolia Grove. You can play your golf course. And so between them, you've got, four 18-hole championship golf courses plus a par 3, right?
Yeah, and you know, like I said, Magnolia Grove is great. They have the LPGA on the Crossings course. They didn't have it this year. Airbus pulled out at the last minute. They're working on a sponsor to get it back, but they've had the PGA there for years. The par 3 courts are fantastic. The trail did, you know, the way golf's going and people are saying, geez, I don't have time to play, you know, 4 or 5 hours out there playing real golf. The par 3 courses were built. They have 18 great par 3s. I mean, it's not like it's a pitch and putt. People call, oh, they got a pitch and putt. It's not. There are 18 great holes. So you've got two 18 championship courses at Magnolia Grove, the Falls, and the Crossings. You've got the par 3 course. You've got our facility where you've got two great 18s. You can stay at the Grand Hotel. There's the Battle House Hotel downtown, very historic hotel downtown Mobile. The Renaissance Riverview Hotel, Marriott, again, another Marriott Renaissance. You can stay there. Great to be down during Mardi Gras. February, March is Mardi Gras season. Fabulous to come down, and, you know, the weather's a little better than it is in northern Alabama, in the northern trail courses. They're about 3 or 4 weeks behind us. You know, Muscle Shoals, Huntsville start to peak sort of that middle of March, whereas we're sort of, you know, coming out of it, and the grass is starting to grow again that third week of February. Our azaleas are blooming, you know, by March 5th to 10th, our azaleas are popping and that kind of thing. So pretty time of year to get started down south a little earlier.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area. I was really taken by it, especially around Point Clear there. We had dinner one night at a little restaurant down on the marina there in the little town, and just a great area, great place to be, and wintertime would be a wonderful place. Hey, you mentioned the LPGA over there at Magnolia Grove. Now, the LPGA also goes to Capitol Hill, and the PGA played at, Ross Bridge this year.
No, actually, the LPGA was at Prattville, where it's been. They played the Senator course there, which is the one you and I met on.
Right.
And I'll tell you a quick story about that golf course. It was, you know, a flat field. It had 6 feet of elevation change. I remember being out there, and Dr. Bronner asked everybody, well, what are you going to do with this property and make it into a great golf course? I remember Roger going, well, we're going to grade it, and we'll plant trees, and in 20 years it'll be a great golf course. And it went silent. Dr. Bronner looks at everybody and says, we're not waiting 20 years to be great. You guys fix this place now. And as you saw, it's a links course. You know, it has probably 40 to 50 feet of elevation change. You play down through what looked like dunes and things like that, but there's no holding back. But I had the opportunity this year actually to caddy at the LPGA. Young lady that works for me, Elaine Wood, was a high school golfer down here, played at Spanish Fork. She is a junior at Montevallo University in Birmingham. She was an All-American last year, and they had two spots open for amateurs to do the qualifier. And Elaine put her application in, and I sent a thing in to all the publicity people. I said, how about this? Local girl, works at Lakewood, All-American from Montevallo, you know, playing in the qualifier with the golf course builders or caddy, because I know that place inside out. I was on that facility every day. We built it in 1997 through 99, and that was the only trail course we had going those years, so I was on site every day. And that, you know, like I said, it's not going to win an award for the most natural golf course, but for the best creation, it's fantastic. So I caddied for Elaine. She did very well. She ran out of steam. She tripled the 17th. She was two over going down with two holes to go, and made a triple on 17, but she did great. But that was kind of a neat story, getting the caddy, so I can add caddy to my resume. Director of golf, golf course superintendent, and golf course builder. I got it all now.
There you go. You get the home run. Yeah, you know, of the three courses there at Capitol Hill, there's three 18-hole golf courses. I like that golf course the best of all three of them, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it's a neat course. It's got blind shots. You can cut the corners, but there's bunkers. You have to know where the bunkers on the back sides of the rounds, because if you're going to cut corners, we're going to be sitting there waiting for you with a putt bunker. Kind of making it like Lynx Golf. My roots are from Scotland, you know. I've worked in Ireland numerous times, lived over there a couple times. You play LaHinch. Trust me, you're going to hit some blind shots. And the caddy goes, aim at the little man up in the mound there. I'm going, what? He goes, yeah, but you got to wait till the players walk on the other side. You're crossing holes and things like that. So right. We tried to do things. We had some double green. You know, you can't get too crazy like they have over in Ireland. You'll get sued in the United States if you build them like that. So that's we tried to make that place, tried to make golf fun there, and I think that's what we did.
Hey, one more thing. You and I were talking before we went on the air here tonight. You have a unique philosophy. A lot of the PGA pros who work at the clubs today really don't play that much golf. Their games suffer. They become they have to work in the shop. They got to shuttle golf carts around and keep scorecards and all that kind of thing. And they don't get to play that much. You kind of take a little different view of that at Lakewood.
Yeah, well, coming from the, you know, being director of golf for 4 years, I mean, I went down and I'm taking my class, my level one in the PGA, so I'm sitting down there with a bunch of 22-year-olds, and they look at me and go, how old are you? I go, 55, and they go, and you're the director of golf, but you're just taking your level one? You know, they're trying to figure that one out, and they're making $10 an hour. But the philosophy I had when I took over as director of golf, I watched the profession in my mind just be torn apart. Pros used to, you know, own their own shops. They used to, you know, like I said, they owned the carts. They played golf with the members. They played in the local tournaments. Golf club memberships were proud that their pro could play well in tournaments and you know, be the best player in the city, the state, or the section. And I've just seen that disappear to where golf pros wanted to go fishing. Last place they wanted to do was be on the golf course after they left work. The clubs took things away from them and said, hey, you can sell my shirts for me now. And then, you know, I had one coach tell me, he says, you know, I'm just a glorified shirt folder. But the saddest thing about it all was he said, you know what, Neil? I'm the best there is in the world. I'll bet you folding shirts.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll bet you got invested in it, and that's what your claim to fame is as a professional. So, and, you know, at the end of the day, when I took over, you know, I said, guys, I said, I'm going to go back in time. We're going to play golf with the members. My pros have to show me that they played with what group they played with every week. It's part of the review. They're over right now playing in the Dixie Section Championship for 2 days. I want them to play in tournaments, as I do myself. I want them to, you know, get out and be with the members. The members love for them to play with them, to teach them, and all that. Yeah, they got to do a little bit of shop time, and yeah, they got to sell some merchandise. But at the end of the day, I've got other people that do a better job, that are better at selling some of that than we are. And so that's my philosophy. It sticks at the club, but people just absolutely are ecstatic with it. And that's, you know, getting back to what the profession is.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. I'm with you 100% on that one. We have been talking to Neil Frazier, who currently is the director of golf at Lakewood, part of the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail down in Point Clear, Alabama, on the eastern shore of Mobile Bay. He had spent some time with Robert Trent Jones in the construction business. And Neil, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Always enjoy time getting to spend with you and look forward to being able to get back down your way to see you again someday.
Brad, thank you. Come visit us. Everybody come play the trail. You'll love it. Thank you.
All right. You take care. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Brad. Bye-bye.
He's got me sold. I mean, I'm going already.
It's worth the trip, Carlos. I guarantee it.
And he can sell it, man. And his history and all that he's gone through and all that. Wow, he's really, really prepared for all this. I mean, it's exciting just to listen to him, and it just makes you go there right away.
Hey, Carlos, I got an email today actually from one of my contacts at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. and they announced winter memberships for this winter, beginning November through February at 9 of the locations. Not all 11 are involved in this, but just 9 of them. Golfers can purchase a winter membership in monthly increments for up to the 4 months. The membership is $150 per month for an individual or $225 for a couple. That's just a heck of a deal. If you're going to go down to South for a month or you're going down for a couple weeks, $150 to play unlimited golf at those Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail golf courses, that is unbelievable. So anybody out there thinking about going south this winter, you may want to look into that. You can go to, I think it's rtj.com, or just Google Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. It'll come up, and go on there. I'm sure it's on there. But I just got the email today about that.
So there you have the information. That wraps up our very important guest, PAG of the Week, Neil Fraser. We're going to take one more short break. When we come back, we have, yes, the practice range. And we're going to talk about something that you'll like about it. Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson becoming Ryder Cup captains. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range, where every week, Fred and I pick a topic, we take our shots at it, and this week, we're going to be talking about Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson becoming Ryder Cup captains. Yes? Well, let's put our main topic in perspective. You know, Team Europe has been kicking Team USA's butt for the past 20 years. They have won 5 of the last 6 and 7 of the last 9 Ryder Cup events. And following Europe's 3rd straight win at Glen Eagles in September, the PGA of America shows a task force of 11 people, that included Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, to try to find answers to end 2 decades of European dominance. Among the things this mighty task force would do was to find a new captain. The only 2 winning captains during this time of those last 20 years have been Paul Issinger in 2008 and Ben Crenshaw in 1999. They chose David Love III as their captain for next year's at Hasseltine. One of the most colorful, let's call him colorful, players on tour, Jim Daly, said last year that Phil Mickelson or Tiger Woods should captain the United States at the next Ryder Cup and didn't believe the task force would resolve Americans' losing streak. You know, he said, and I will quote, "Phil Mickelson should be the captain and play at Hasseltine. Phil seems to thrive on Ryder Cup competition, does well when he plays. He knows everything about the Ryder Cup, so maybe it should be him or Tiger who should be the next captain. It's not rocket science why the European team has been winning, and it doesn't need a task force to work it out," end of quote. Keep in mind, this comes from a person that has never played a single match in Ryder Cup. But there's a sentiment out there that this should happen. Then we have also the other side, like the one expressed by Golf Channel analyst Brendel Chambly, who created a buzz centered around Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson last week when he said they were undeserving Ryder Cup captains because they have shown a lack of passion as players in the event. Well, let me tell you this. I am with Daly and not with Chambly. He totally missed the bus in this one. David Love III said it best when he cited Ben Crenshaw and Paul Issinger, 2 successful captains who lack strong Ryder Cup playing records, as examples of why Woods and Mickelson can work. Even Davis earned his 2nd captaincy in 2016, and his career mark as a player is just 9-12-5. Records have nothing to do with the passion for the Ryder Cup. The question that everybody should be asking would be if they have earned a player's respect so that they would rally around them. But like Daly said, hey, this is not rocket science. Europeans playing together more as a team rather than individuals know what is at stake and play with more passion and fire than the Americans. That's true. This is a team match where truly, truly there is no I in team. And they have shown it over and over during these past 20 years. When Team USA learns to play for the honor and the privilege that is to play for winning the Ryder Cup, and show that fire and determination, just like we saw from Jordan Spieth at the Ryder Students Cup, when during a stretch he single-handedly gave Team USA the lead and show how much he cared about winning or losing what is by many acknowledged as a team exhibition. But he cared about it. That is when they will start winning again. There's no task force that can achieve that, so the argument about Phil or Tiger is a moot one until that happens. But at the end of the day, Fred, whether they should be captains in due time, it will be. They should be captains in training before taking full charge. And that's my take.
Well, you know, I'm a little bit divided on this issue, Carlos. I can see the players of today wanting to play for both Tiger and Phil as a captain of a Ryder or President's Cup team. You know, Phil has outstanding credentials. He has participated in 10 Ryder Cups and has not missed one since 1995. He's also been in 11 President's Cups, 9 winning teams, and also, although he was the captain's pick this year, he was one of the leaders on the team in Korea and had one of the best records. His overall record in Ryder Cup is not that great. Like you say, it's not a winning record. He's 16-19-6. The other thing is, in 10 Ryder Cups, he's only been on 2 winning teams. Is that amazing or what? That would just gall me to death. As great a career as Phil Mickelson has had, only 2-8 in Ryder Cup. That is amazing. When you've got, you know, most of those years, you got Tiger and Phil both on the team. I still don't understand how they keep winning all those things. To compare that with other great American players, though, in Ryder Cup history, Lee Trevino totaled 20 points. He didn't play in 10 Ryder Cups, I'm guaranteeing you. Lanny Watkins had 21.5. Arnold Palmer played in just 6 Ryder Cups, but his record, 22, was 8-2, total 23 points. But Billy Casper is the all-time U.S. leader with 23.5 points and a 20-10-7 record. So let's talk about Tiger a little bit. He's played in 7 Ryder Cups. He has a losing record also, 13-17-3. And at times, he looked as if he wanted to be anywhere else except playing in another meaningless team event. Maybe that's why he would make a good captain, because he could tell these young guys, hey, I didn't want to do this, but now that I'm older, I realize I should have had a better attitude and maybe tried a little harder. You know, guys like Palmer and Nicklaus, they just wanted to win. You know, Trevino, they just wanted to win. You know, these guys today, they all make so much money. This is just one more obligation of their time, and they don't want to go do it. You know, it's just they got to put their time in, and so that's what they do. You know, the young players like Spieth and Fowler, they grew up idolizing Woods and Mickelson. They appreciate the longevity of their careers and the major championships they've won, just like guys before wanted to play for Palmer and Nicklaus. Mickelson has kept himself very involved over the past several team competitions. He serves as a de facto big brother and mentor to the younger players, takes them under his wing, plays practice rounds with them, tries to make them more comfortable. He seems to be energized by the younger guys and wants to hang out with them. Woods, on the other hand, always been the loner, not really getting too close to anyone. But when Rory McIlroy challenged Woods for the number one spot in the world and eventually overtook Tiger, we saw Tiger interact a little bit more with McIlroy and become maybe a little bit more open. He even seems to be more open and talkative with his playing partners these days when he does show up to play an event. Woods' personal issues since 2009 have certainly changed him. Is he more genuine? Would he make a good coach for a Ryder Cup or President's Cup? I just don't think he would. You know, I know he's going to get a shot sometime, but I'll be interested to see how it goes. Earl Woods raised Tiger with a tight fist and a stern work ethic. Today's players do not react well to that atmosphere. Just ask Tom Watson how that worked out for him. Look at the success Fred Couples has with the president. Fred is like the antithesis of Tom Watson, okay? Laid back, I want to be everyone's friend. That is definitely not the thing that Tiger Woods would bring to the table. You know, and on the other hand, maybe it would be a good thing for Phil Mickelson to be a captain. Maybe one of his team members can publicly embarrass him as he did to Tom Watson at Glen Eagles in 2014. You know, Carlos, whatever the case, if Phil and Tiger want to be captains, I'm sure the PGA for the Ryder Cup and or the PGA Tour for the President's Cup will name them to the post. They are still the biggest draws in golf and would bring a ton of eyeballs to the matches. Better yet, this is what I really want to see, Carlos. I want to see Tiger as an assistant captain for Phil. Wouldn't that be priceless?
That would be MasterCard-like. I mean, that would be the like you said, priceless, right? That's MasterCard. That would be a commercial for them. But no, I have to agree with that. But to me, it just it's such a thing that people are talking so much to Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. I mean, they can bring anybody else, but I still think the whole team as a whole has to start playing as one and start yelling more together, just like the Europeans do, and get that camaraderie down, because otherwise it doesn't matter who's going to be up there. They're never going to win again. I mean, that's just it. You have to play as a team, stop that individuality. And, of course, you know, that's what you're taught in golf. You're playing for yourself. But this time, the Ryder Cup is for your country. You're going against Europe. I think that Phil, if any of the two, like you said, Phil would be a good one, because he does have that fiery attitude about him now. Can he get the players to rally around him? I don't know. We'll see what happens anyway. Next year is right around the corner. And Davis Love III has a tough, tough draw to do there. So any other comments you want to make before we go to our final thoughts?
No, but it's going to be interesting over the next few years to see how it all plays out. You know they're going to want their shot at doing that. I hope it's not a failure for Tiger. I hope it goes well for him. But he's still got to change his attitude a lot more than what it's been in the past.
Yeah, that's why he needs a few years as an assistant captain before taking over. So, but I'm sure he'll get his chance. We'll see about that. Anyway, we now go to our final thoughts, and we're going to start with – I'm going to start. Hey, let me tell you a little bit about the Australian Open, where Jordan Spieth and Adam Scott will have other big names joining them. The first European to win it, that was Lee Westwood, and the incoming Ryder Cup captain – Darren Clark, they're expected to be the latest internationals headed to Sydney for the 100th National Championship next month. Former number one in the world, Westwood, who outgunned Greg Norman on the fourth playoff hole to win the Stonehaven Cup at Melbourne's Metropolitan Golf Club in 1997, will be definitely a major draw card there at the Australian Golf Club. He will be joined by his great friend in Northern Irishman Clark, who won his first major at the age of 42 with a stirring British Open triumph 4 years ago. Tournament organizers are expected to sign off the pair on their arrival on Tuesday, so that would be two great additions for that tournament. Also, I have to talk about Rory McIlroy, who will continue to host the Irish Open for the next 3 years on behalf of his foundation, with Dubai Duty Free also extending its sponsorship until 2018. The prize fund for next year's tournament at the K Club over May 19 to the 22 will increase by 60%, rising from 2.5 million euros to 4 million euros. Four-time major winner McIlroy, who missed a cut at Royal County Down earlier this year, said, and I quote, "The Irish Open has always meant so much to me, so I am really excited to announce my commitment to host the tournament on behalf of the Rory Foundation for the next 3 years." So that's very good news that, he got to be there still as the host. And, hey, more than that, he got that purse to be risen for 60% from.
Yeah, I've got quite a bit, Carlos. There was a lot of stuff came down today, actually. It was announced that Jordan Spieth will forego playing at Torrey Pines next spring, in January, and instead cashed in on a huge appearance fee to play in the Singapore Open. Organizers said that Spieth will headline the Singapore Open in January. when the tournament returns after a three-year absence. He's going to join Adam Scotti and Poulter, Angel Cabrera, and defending champion Mateo Manassero. There's only $1 million purse over there. They got to be paying more than that to get him to come over there. So and skip the Farmers Insurance. So that's pretty big for him. Also, something kind of interesting. Ian Poulter is outside the Race to Dubai number, and needs another start. And so Rich Beam, who was going to play in Hong Kong, has given up his spot to Ian, and Ian jumped in a plane to go over there and play in the Hong Kong Open to try and qualify to get into the Race to Dubai and get inside the number for that. So I found that kind of interesting. I wonder if Ian's going to give him Rich a Ferrari or something for that. Bob Herrig wrote a piece for ESPN. Tiger is down in Mexico City this week for the Bridgestone America's Golf Cup. He's not playing. He was going to play with Matt Kuchar in that event, but as you know, he had to undergo surgery 5 weeks ago again for his back, and he's still recuperating. He has not started a rehab yet. He's still pretty sore from that. He said he played in a good deal of pain for most of 2015. And he's looking forward to getting started back in rehab, but it's just not time yet. And he is hoping to be able to come back sometime in 2016. We don't know when yet. So those things all came down today. A couple other items here real quick I found interesting in the news. Petco Park, where the San Diego Padres play, is going to be turned into a nine-hole golf course from November 5th through November 8th. You know, they did that here in Toledo last year with a putt-putt golf course. They took the Fifth Third Field, which is home for the Toledo Mudhens, and went out in the outfield and put in a putt-putt golf course for like 3 or 4 days. But this is a full golf course. They're going to start out with a putting green in the dugout. They're going to go up on the upper deck and hit shots down to a green down on the field. And they're already taking green fees. It's $100, really $50 a person, $100 a twosome, $200 for a foursome. They've already got a waiting list, so I hope that works out well for them. And also news from England. Venerable Wentworth Club in London is sold to a new owner, and he announced a new membership pricing schedule that has the whole town a-buzzing. It seems he wants only the rich and famous, especially young Chinese and Russian business people. The old pricing of £8,000 per year, which is about $12,000 U.S., is being bumped up to $80,000, that's £80,000, which is about $120,000 U.S., which will drop the membership from about 3,000 members to about 250. The new owner, Dr. Shanchai Rui Rungarung, seems to be a disciple of the Donald Trump School of Golf. Golf is not for everyone, only those who can afford it, Carlos. And finally, it appears that the event last week, the Fries.com is going to have a new sponsor. Safeway Stores is going to take that over. But it appears that the head shed at the PGA Tour also needed some time off after the season ended, after the FedEx Cup. No one from the PGA Tour even showed up for the new sponsor announcement. So Safeway is coming on board for a new six-year stint. The somewhat awkward announcement was left to Johnny Miller to do a cameo with a Safeway rep for the announcement. Maybe that had something to do with the extremely low numbers, the low TV numbers for the Fries.com. Tim Finchem just didn't feel he could venture out from Florida for just a few scattered viewers, Carlos.
That doesn't venture order for Safeway, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not. But anyway, that should tell Tim. please finish this nonsense of the wraparound. How much longer are we going to do it? Oh, my God.
They can't. They still got sponsors. They got sponsors. They got Safeway paying $6 million or whatever it costs them to sponsor it. They're, you know, as long as they get people to pay it, they're going to keep doing it, man.
It's torture. Anyway, well, that wraps up our show for this week. So, Back Niners, that's wrap up. Another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past 80 minutes. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Neil Fraser. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow our show. On Twitter, our ID is @Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.